Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Retro Gamers Podcast, episode number 237, and this one's going to look a lot different than any other episode. Larry here, and again, conspicuous by his absence, Anthony, just unavailable this weekend, but I still wanted to come to you guys and gals who are listening to the show everywhere. You listen to podcasts, and me and Anthony, we appreciate it so much. Whether you're listening on Podbean, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, our YouTube page, our Instagram page, our Facebook page, and you can just do a search pretty much anywhere. Search for the Retro Gamers Podcast. You know the logo. You'll find us very easily. But I wanted to come to you this week again with another short episode. But I want to bring to you memories and how can I explain it? Probably one of the most fun times of gaming that I personally had. It was 25 years ago. Well, a little more than 25 years ago for us here in North America. But on June 23rd, 1996, Nintendo launched in Japan the Nintendo 64. In my opinion, probably the best Nintendo system that was made. A system that left a legacy for me and my memories of playing games, both by myself, with Anthony, with our friends, in college. I mean, I'm going to talk about some of that here, and what I'm going to do, now this is more for the video side, YouTube and Instagram TV, I'm going to overlay this with just some wonderful video footage, unfortunately not of me playing, but of N64 games, N64 gameplay. If I mention a game, I'll reach out there and try and put it up in the video. So so this is going a bit old school for me, where this is just straight up audio. This is my forte, straight up audio, but I'll see what I can do with the video portion of it anyway. But again, the Nintendo 64, that gray brick of a system, and at a time when everything was going to CDs, PlayStation, Sega CD, the Saturn, PlayStation 2, not yet, wasn't out yet, 96. But basically, all the systems were heading for CDs. And Nintendo just needed one more holdout. Technically two, if you look at the GameCube. But one more holdout to stick with traditional cartridges, which I think in the long run are better than CDs as far as storage, or at least at the time. Storage, accessibility. Yeah, CDs, you got great music, and some great, at the time, great full motion video. But, you know, cartridges almost never really had an issue. You know, you just grab them, you throw them around, you toss them a little bit, give them a little bit of love, and they keep on ticking. But the N64, again, June 23rd, 1996, released in Japan. Here in North America, we get it September 29th, 1996. Europe and Australia see it March of 97. The lifespan of the N64 ran from 1996 to 2002. So I'm just getting all the nerd stats out of the way right now. Selling worldwide almost 33 million units. Here in the Americas, in North America, 20.63 million units sold of the Nintendo 64. The N64 coming out, I remember, besides, obviously, the leap in graphics from the Super Nintendo to the N64, I remember, first of all, the ability, and it's not the first one to do it, but it was the first one I remember, that right out of the box, it's designed for four players. There's four ports on the N64. Before that, only used the two. And this is why, in 1996, I was a sophomore, 96, 97, so sophomore, either freshman, sophomore, or sophomore junior, because I graduated in 98, so someone do the math out there, of high school. But this system was designed for what we call nowadays couch co-op. Back then, we just called it co-op. And, you know, game, you know, playing with friends, party atmosphere. So I thought it was really cool that it was four players with four inputs just right away. And then Nintendo, being Nintendo, they're always looking to innovate. They're always looking to change. They're always looking to make something unique for their system. And I've gone on record before in saying that the N64 controller is probably my favorite, definitely my favorite Nintendo controller, let alone my favorite controller, almost period. The design is very weird. You know, when you see for the first time the N64 controller and the way it looked with its three spikes, and it's, you know, you got the analog stick right in the middle. So when you look at it, it looks very weird, very spaceship-like, Star Wars reference thrown in here somewhere. But then when you start playing the games, you can see why the controller was designed the way it was designed. I mean, I don't even remember. Obviously, it was used, and I know there's some games, but for the most part, I don't remember ever using the D-pad on an N64 controller. It was all about analog, that center analog stick, and right underneath it, which you don't normally see, it goes hidden. But right underneath the analog stick, when you're holding it, where your forefinger would be, is the Z trigger. And to say how that changed the way you play video games, going into that 3D dimension, that third dimension of gameplay. And I'll talk about Super Mario 64, Ocarina of Time, GoldenEye. I'll get to all those in a minute. But to experience those games, the way you hold the controller, and the way you move the analog stick, and the fact that you have that Z button right underneath your fingertips, literally right underneath your finger, it just made gameplay even more simpler to get into. And it felt more realistic, if I could say that. So let's start with GoldenEye. Let's kind of get right into it right now. I'll go back to some other stuff hardware-wise. But I can't go long without mentioning GoldenEye. GoldenEye 007, top 10, top 5, to some people, I'm sure even top 3 of the greatest N64 games of all time. Based off the Pierce Brosnan movie, GoldenEye, it was Pierce Brosnan's first go at being James Bond, 007, and it had the license, the full license from the movie, so you got Pierce Brosnan in it and everyone else who's in the movie. I love that movie. Pierce Brosnan is actually my favorite Bond of all the Bonds because I enjoyed that movie, Tomorrow Never Dies, The World Is Not Enough, things like that, with Pierce. And when GoldenEye came out, and I'm not even talking about multiplayer yet. That is a world unto itself. But to play a first-person shooter, and I've played first-person shooters on the Super Nintendo, you know, there was Doom on there, and some other first-person shooters. But to have the ability now, with the way that N64 controller was designed, and you hold the center spire, or whatever you want to call it, the middle of the controller. So you always held the controller off-center. That was weird. You always had it off-center, because, again, you never really dealt with the directional pad. But in a first-person shooter like GoldenEye, the way your hand is positioned on the controller, it feels like you have an actual weapon in your hand. It felt like you had that gun, whether it's the golden gun or whatever guns you found in GoldenEye as you went through the game. It just felt one step closer to reality. And to be able to maneuver with the analog stick and then just start, rifling away with that Z button, the Z trigger underneath. This is one of the few things that's going to be hard to explain in words. It's something that you have to experience. And nowadays, look, we have VR nowadays, so the experience is lost. But they always have that question is always posed. If you can go back in time and re-experience something for the first time, just wipe your memory clean and then go through the experience. For me, the experience is going to be playing the Zenit 64 game 007 with that controller and feeling the how realistic, quote-unquote, it was with firing a weapon. And then, of course, the gameplay of 007, it just goes without saying. Jump forward a few years, I'm in college. I went to Adelphi University in Garden City, New York, on Long Island. Fast forward, I'm in the dorm. I got the N64 with me. I don't have four controllers, but I got two. And a couple of my friends in the dorms, they bring over their own controllers. It's like, all right, this works. And it was good because the controllers were different colors. So that made it even easier to distinguish whose is whose. But then to experience GoldenEye multiplayer for the first time, like actual multiplayer, because Anthony definitely never played GoldenEye. He's always said that he's not good with first-person perspective, which is fine. I don't think I ever really played it with anyone else in our group, because admittedly, when we hung out, we usually hung out at Anthony's house. He had the system, and he did not have GoldenEye. But in college, playing GoldenEye and playing multiplayer, again, another kind of situation where if I can experience it all over again for the first time, I would. And granted, folks, again, remember, we're not playing online. This is four people in the same room, sitting next to each other, all sharing the same screen. The screen is cubed off four different quadrants, and each person has their own little mini screen. And yes, you can see the other person's screen. And that was kind of part of the gameplay. You know, they had you spec your certain multiplayer maps. You'd go in there and it's basically last man standing. And the part of it would be like to kind of look at the other screens like, all right, so-and-so's on level two. So-and-so's over by the computer room. So there was some strategy to even outright looking at your opponent's screens. And then we had stuff like prison rules where, hey, if you didn't have a gun, too bad, you're still getting shot. And of course, the golden gun rule was if, you know, in the game, if you find the golden gun, it's one shot, one kill. So that led to a lot of arguments, but a lot of good times in college. And I can say the same with Mario Party, the Mario Party series, which is getting a resurgence. Actually, the N64 version is getting a resurgence on the Switch coming out later this year. Mario Party Superstars, or whatever it's called. I don't have it in front of me. It's going to feature five N64 levels, N64 boards, from the first three Mario Parties. I didn't really play three. Mario Party 3, I didn't play. Two, I think I did play. One, I absolutely played. And me and Anthony have talked about it before, the Epic. And they've taken this out of the Switch version, which I'm kind of sad to hear go. But there were... everyone knows Mario Party. I don't think I really have to explain Mario Party. But with the minigames on in Mario Party 1 on the N64, a lot of them, involved rotating the analog stick, like in a 360-degree rotation. And what people would do is, the idea, I'm sure, on Nintendo side was you just use your thumb, but we all smartened up and we would use the palm of our hand because we get more traction and we can spin more on the analog, which then led to chafing and losing skin on the palm of our hands and thus causing Nintendo to come out with gloves, Mario Party gloves, which I haven't seen in decades. God only knows where they are. But another great part, and I mean, it's designed to be a party game, hence the name Mario Party. Another one that caused fights and arguments and joy and laughter in college and at home, because we definitely played that at home as well, Mario Party. But the N64, to me, it's also the first system I remember buying with my own money. And of course, now I have adult money and I buy ridiculous stuff. But back then, you know, I had to save up birthdays, save up Christmas, if I did some chores around the house, save up some money then. And September of 1996, I went out and I purchased with my own money in a Nintendo 64, which was awesome. Nintendo 64 also was the first Nintendo game without a pack-in game. So it didn't come with anything. And that was a problem. Because A, they were sold out of Super Mario 64 when I went to pick it up at Toys R Us. And because of that, I also didn't have much money to buy another, maybe less expensive game. I actually owned the N64 for probably a good week and a half, before buying my first game. Yes, it's much like the Dreamcast. When I brought the Dreamcast home recently, I had no games. So I had no games for the N64. It was just sitting there. I don't even know if it worked. And then eventually I was able to go out, and the first two games I bought, actually the first game I bought wasn't even Super Mario 64. It was Cruisin' USA. Cruisin' USA. In fact, that series is making a return on the Switch with Cruisin' Blast. But Cruisin' USA was the first game, which is an arcade racer. Classic, classic game. I don't know why it never really got more releases on home consoles. I think it should have. It's one of the best racing games that there is, that Cruisin' series. Almost has a feel, has like an OutRun feel to it, to me. I know a lot of people are going to be yelling at me for that, but whatever. But yeah, Cruisin' USA was the first game I owned. And then I got my hands on Super Mario 64. And the world changed again. For all these years playing Mario on a side-scroller, now I have this 3D world to play and to maneuver in and to alter in some points. And yes, again, Super Mario 64 available if you can still find the cart. If you haven't already bought it, because it's technically not available anymore, Super Mario 64 on the Switch. In fact, it's actually, real quick to say, there's only five N64 games that were ported to the Switch. Turok 2, Super Mario 64, Doom 64, and Star Wars Pod Racer, or Jedi Racer, whatever they're calling it now. So shockingly, only five N64 games were ported to the Switch. And as of right now, it looks like we're not getting Ocarina of Time or Majora's Mask anytime soon. Luckily, you can get those on the 3DS, and I heard they're very, very good, great ports on the 3DS. But so, yes, yeah, so only five N64 games, but Super Mario 64, which you can play now on the Switch, and the Switch version really didn't lose anything to it. In fact, if unfortunately you don't have a copy of Super Mario 64 on the Switch with 3D All-Stars, if you've played Odyssey, Super Mario Odyssey is a true successor as far as gameplay to Super Mario 64. Sunshine didn't do it, Galaxy or Galaxy 2 didn't do it. Great games, don't get me wrong, but Odyssey, when I started playing Odyssey, I got that feel for Super Mario 64. And spoiler alert, because it's been about 4 or 5 years at this point, in Odyssey, when I finally got to, you know, Peach's Castle, and it's basically the N64 version, all polygony and, you know, all pixelated or what, oh, no, not pixels, but polygons. And I just had a grin from ear to ear when I hit that level and I hit that world, and I didn't want to leave it. It just reminded me so, and a lot of the hidden tricks are in the castle, just like they were in the original Super Mario 64. But to, and I played some 3D games before Mario. Pretty sure I probably, because Anthony had a PlayStation before I did, way before I did. I got my PlayStation in college. He had a PlayStation beforehand. And so I tried my hand at like Tomb Raider, Resident Evil, some games like that that he had. And I wasn't crazy at the time. I wasn't crazy about it. The gameplay, I've always, the game mechanics and the original controller mechanics for Tomb Raider and Resident Evil, I never understood why they made them the way they did. But they did. So it turned me off to those games. Later, Resident Evil 2 would be released on the N64, and I actually loved it on the N64. But with Super Mario, I was hesitant going into it. You know, I'm like, am I going to enjoy this? Is it going to be fun? Is it going to be too annoying? And lo and behold, it's one of the greatest games of all time, and just how smooth it ran, and you know, you didn't get lost. And you didn't feel repetitive. Even though you had to play the board, you know, about 7 or 8 times or whatever to get all the stars, it just never felt repetitive. And then there's key little things, like in the water level, I don't remember the name of the board, but in the water level, depending on how high or low you jump into the painting, that sets the water level. You know, things like that you discover. Because we're right, 96, 97, I probably had Prodigy at that point. I didn't even have AOL. I just had Prodigy, and it was basically all message boards. And I wasn't really using it that much. So, and the internet wasn't really there to give all these hints and tricks and everything with the games. So it's stuff like that. You know, probably the Nintendo 64 was probably the last system I was kind of discovering these tips and tricks on my own. Who am I kidding? I probably read something in Nintendo Power about the water level. But still, the fondness of Super Mario 64, and to be honest, what is it, 120 stars? Because eventually, this is, and before we knew about retro gaming and the idea to keep games, you know, in the late 90s, it was all about selling back games. Funko Land here in North America, or at least in the US, Funko Land was all about selling used games. They were like one of the first major chains to sell used games and buy back video games. So yeah, we were selling games back left and right. You know, we're done with a game, all right, we're never going to play it again, sell it back. Look, I don't regret ever selling back a game back then, because that's what we did. Who knew? So I don't, you know, there's a lot of games that I wish I kept that I sold back, but Super Mario 64 was one of them. I sold it back with only 119 stars found. I never got the last star, and I never unlocked Yoshi, or found Yoshi, I should say. To this day, I still haven't, not even on the 3D All-Stars yet. So I've never, shocking, never completed Super Mario 64. It's a goal of mine. One of the other reasons why I didn't really complete Super Mario 64 is because another game came out that was a quite literal game changer. And this one, maybe, you know, I'll save for Anthony to talk about next week, but I can certainly comment on it as well, is Zelda Ocarina of Time. Probably one of the best, if not the best Zelda game of all time. It was the first, again, another first in my, you know, memories. When I went to college, I had, actually, I got to double check that one. I was going to say, because it was either Ocarina of Time or Majora's Mask, which now, let me just check. Zelda Ocarina of Time. Ocarina of Time came out, oh no, this would have been it. Okay, November 21st, 98 is when Zelda came out. So I was already in college. And when I got to college, in the mail, I'd gotten my first credit card. It was like a $500 limit. But it was already active, it was in my name, and it was my first credit card ever. And boy, oh boy, did that damage me for the rest of my life. I remember talking to my parents, I'm like, hey, I got this credit card in the mail, it's got a low limit. Well, $500 back then was a lot. I remember my parents saying, use it only for emergencies. Well, the emergency came on November 21st, 1998, when I needed to get a copy of The Legend of Zelda, Ocarina of Time. And that was the first game, the first thing I ever bought with a credit card. My own credit card. Well, yeah, credit card. Is Legend of Zelda, Ocarina of Time. And it was a worthwhile investment. There's a lot of other stuff I've bought with credit that is garbage and I don't have anymore. But Ocarina of Time was worth it. And I'm not a big RPG fan, as everyone knows. I do like Zelda. I will talk more about this next week. I have come to love to hate Breath of the Wild. And I'll discuss that next week with Anthony. But Ocarina of Time was another one. You know, leading up to Ocarina, we had the original Zelda on Nintendo. Fantastic. Zelda 2, I'm not going to talk about. Link to the Past on the Super Nintendo. Oh my God, gorgeous. Link's Awakening on a Game Boy. I still say one of the best Zelda games, period, one of the best games, period, is the original Zelda version, which we get a chance to experience again when the Game & Watch comes out later this year. So now we're going into Zelda 3D. And again, just like Super Mario, I kind of got a little trepidation. It's like, you know, is this going to be very heavy on role-playing and gameplay mechanics? And it wasn't that heavy. Yeah, it has a role-play feel to it because it's Zelda, but it's still an adventure game. And you still go out, you're hacking, you're slashing. And again, the 3D models, the way the world was, the way you experience this open world, basically, of Ocarina of Time, discovering the Ocarina, realizing it's an actual instrument that's been used for hundreds and thousands of years. And eventually I did beat Zelda. I did beat Ocarina of Time. And it was probably the first and one of very few N64 games I completed. But Ocarina of Time, the music to it, and just the images. You know, Zelda always brings with it beautiful images. Whether it was 8-bit, whether it was on the Game Boy, it still was able to produce gorgeous images, characters, designs. And the N64 was no different. Even with all the polygons, it still worked out. And it was still a tremendous game to play when you're literally putting, like, you're in Link's shoes. As much as it wasn't a first person, it was basically a third person. But it knocked it out of the park. And to me, no Zelda game thereafter in a 3D environment has been able to match up with Ocarina of Time. Majora's Mask, I've talked about it before, I cannot stand the time element in it. That ruined it for me. Wind Waker, I didn't get into. Twilight Princess and Skyward Sword, I didn't try. And I'll talk about Breath of the Wild next week. Now, stuff like the Minish Cap on Game Boy Advance, phenomenal. But with Ocarina of Time, again, it was just another, it's a single player game, but the accuracy of using the sword, again, with the N64 controller, the arrows, the accuracy of the arrows, you know, you wouldn't see that much accuracy until you started playing it on the Wii. So N64, with their first party, home runs. I would be doing an injustice if I did not fail to mention the WWE games on the N64. No Mercy, WrestleMania 2000. I'm going to go even back a little bit further before those. WCW, NWO Revenge, and WCW versus the World. No, versus the World was on... Oh, wait a minute. Versus the World was on PlayStation. The hell was before Revenge? WCW N64. WCW N64. Oh, World Tour. That's right. No, wait. Did I just say World Tour? Yeah, it was World Tour. Okay, that's right. So there was WCW versus NWO games. All four of those games. And they got progressively better. You had the two with WCW, and then Aki and THQ moved over to WWE, and then they made WrestleMania 2000, and then the pinnacle, No Mercy. Those games, all four of those games, me, Anthony, and our friends played ad nauseum. And as far as like a sports game, yes, I'm calling them sports games. I don't want to hear the moans and groans. Sports entertainment. Didn't really play football, didn't play basketball or baseball or hockey on the system. I don't think I owned any actual sports games on the N64 other than wrestling games. Yeah, I think I can say that. So with these games, these four games in particular, these I remember me and my buddies, me and Anthony and our friends, we got together. And oh my God, the amount of fun we would have with these games. First of all, with WCW, and then, of course, the NWO. NWO's 25 years this year as well. There's a lot of 25 anniversaries this year. A lot happened in 1996. NWO was fresh. It was, you know, WCW was finally beating WWE in the ratings. And with us, you know, the NWO was new. It was fresh. It was awesome. You know, until like three quarters of the roster became NWO, but that's for another podcast. So playing World Tour, playing Revenge, you know, we got our hands on these games and we just had so much fun. The Battle Royals, we had the Goldberg. Oh, no, the Goldberg rule was in Revenge, because it would have like a kind of like a Battle Royal type and a Royal Rumble type. Because none of us like Goldberg. So if Goldberg was next, we had to eliminate Goldberg. Was Goldberg in No Mercy? See, now I got to double check the roster, because I don't remember. Is there even a roster list? I don't think so. Roster. Oops, that's not what I wanted. Roster for WWE No Mercy in 64. Here we go. I don't think Goldberg was in No Mercy. Oh, really? You gotta give it to me like that with the faces? I mean, I can look at it, but a list would have been a whole lot quicker. No, he wasn't. Goldberg wasn't in this, so it was WCW games. I forgot. He plays Howard Finkel. He plays Andre the Giant. That's right. Earl Hebner. Linda McMahon. All right, anyway. So, yeah, No Mercy. And then with WrestleMania 2000 and No Mercy, those went even a few steps further because of the customizations. We were able to create our own characters. But what we also did, what you were able to actually as well, not just create characters, but you can alter the current characters. So we'd play around with that and kind of like change Stone Cold to, you know, some guy named Chris Anderson or whatever. You know, just some indie wrestler before there was indies. And then what we didn't realize was when we changed all those characters, it ended up changing the opening of the game, which was actually pretty funny. So, you know, the N64, it's just for me, and I'm going to start to wrap this up. Again, it's just I have so much memories for the Nintendo, Super Nintendo, Genesis, all these systems, but the N64 is the most that I get as far as memories go. The joy, the fun, the laughter, hanging out with Anthony, hanging out with my friends, college, getting all those games going with the N64. You know, we never really saw any peripherals over here. We never got the 64 disc drive. You know, the Rumble Pack showing up with Star Fox 64. Great game. You know, great flying game. And I never even owned Star Fox on Super Nintendo. So my first one was N64. That's a lie. I own like a college competition version of Star Fox. But that's long gone. But I never owned the original true game. So Star Fox 64 and the Rumble Pack. Rumble Pack changed everything. Now there's this set. I mean, Rumble comes standard in his controllers now. But back then you had to buy a secondary piece to plug into the controller. And that's what caused the rumble. Memory packs. These little memory packs I remember carrying around with custom characters like for the wrestling games and probably some other saves to bring back and forth, like from my house to Anthony's and everything. Those are just some of the attachments that there was for the N64. For me personally, I'm very happy 25 years later that the N64 now is starting to get its feet in the dirt for these retro games. You know, we've been seeing like the clone systems and emulators, everything. But I feel like N64 is next. And as much as I've heard from different people saying how hard it is to emulate the N64, or at least to get the hardware on that FPGA, kind of like what Analog does, very difficult to do with a Nintendo 64. I'm patiently waiting for that day to show up. But in the meantime, my next purchase, I think I'm going to get an original N64. Because, you know, I'll get the Hyperkin HDMI cord. I don't care. They work. I'm happy with them. And to go back and start playing these games again, Hyperkin, Retrobit, they got some beautiful controllers, wireless controllers for the N64 that I can get my hands on. So, you know, as much as right now I'm collecting for TurboGrafx and I'm waiting for Analog to put out their Duo, it's going to be about the N64 very soon. And I'll talk about that more in later episodes. But for now, excuse me, I'm going to wrap this up for y'all. Just my trip down memory lane for, in my opinion, the greatest Nintendo system of all time. One of the greatest systems, period, of all time. Happy 25th anniversary to the Nintendo 64. And folks, remember, you can find us, just find us anywhere. Search the Retro Gamers Podcast. Any and all podcasting app, podcasting listening apps, YouTube, Instagram. We're out there. Hit us up. Let us know your thoughts. Let us know some of your favorite N64 games. And remember, on YouTube, hit that like button. Please hit that like button and share us. Let your friends and family know what we're all about, the Retro Gamers. Anthony will be back next week. And with that, folks, I will see you everywhere next week on the Retro Gamers Podcast.